I'm Brandi Cruz. Happy New Year coming up today on Undivided. Something stinks with Attorney General Bob Ferguson's chicken and tuna checks. We'll dive into it.
The first post of the new year. Nothing's changed.
Plus, as fentanyl overdoses soar, a Democratic political strategist questions the lackluster response. Also, the unbelievable disconnect from some legislative Democrats when it comes to the real-life impacts of Governor Jay Inslee's climate agenda. That and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. Hello and welcome to Undivided on this first day of 2024. Happy New Year to all of you. You thought we'd take the holiday off? I'm sure Nicole thought that too. Not so much. It's exciting. Why would we take the first day of 2024 off? It's going to be such a good year. And you know what? I wish everyone a Happy New Year. Jay Inslee, Happy New Year, sir. Bob Ferguson, Happy New Year to you too, sir. And while I wish you a very happy 2024, that doesn't mean that I am not going to talk about your rotten chicken checks, which just get smellier by the day. So over the holiday break, there has been a lot of news coming out and social media posts about these checks that we've been covering that Attorney General Bob Ferguson sent out with his name on them, signed, sealed, delivered from the Attorney General's office. If you need a little background on this, so Washington State was part of a lawsuit that had to do with price fixing around chicken and tuna companies. So they get $40.6 million, and Bob Ferguson says he's going to take that $40.6 million, and they are going to send refund checks out to low-income Washingtonians. In the press release that his office sent out, they basically said, you know, and laid out the groundwork for who would get a check. You didn't have to prove that you had bought this overpriced chicken or tuna. They were just going to send it to low-income Washington families. I mean, the lowest of the low income, so like 175% of the federal poverty line. And then depending on how many children or dependents you had, you might get more money. So the checks range from like $50 to $120. Now, these checks start coming into folks. And some of them got them in the mail and they're like, something's not quite right here. Checks going to places that they shouldn't have gone, people they shouldn't have gone to, checks going to people who have been dead for years. We have received numerous emails from you guys telling us about stories like that. We're going to get to that momentarily, but I'll also say that there is now a PDC complaint about the chicken checks. And this makes sense because Bob Ferguson's running for governor and he's sending out to all these Washingtonians checks with his name on it. And we thought, gosh, that's got to be against the law. That has to violate some sort of election law. And so an open government advocate named Toby Nixon has now filed a complaint with the PDC. This is the story from the Center Square. Complaint alleges Attorney General used public money for gubernatorial campaign. It says Bob Ferguson decided to send checks to hundreds of thousands or millions of lower income people, giving them a portion of the settlement with chicken and tuna companies, the complaint states. He put his names on the check as the payer and he attached a letter to the checks that is blatant and illegal campaigning with public funds. The complaint further alleges that it is a blatant violation of state law, quote, for Ferguson during an active campaign for governor to send money to voters and have the checks indicate that it is coming from him by name and to include a letter extolling his virtues. It is absolutely undeniably attempting to buy people's votes. The Center Square goes on to say, under state law, if found guilty of this PDC violation, Ferguson's campaign could be fined a civil penalty of up to $5,000 per violation, which would really add up if you count every chicken check as a violation, or three times the economic value of anything received or sought. In an email to the Center Square, the Attorney General's office and their communications director, Brianna Ajo, who we've reached out to as well. We reached out to them over the weekend. I get it. It's a holiday weekend, so hopefully we still hear back. But the AG's office told the Center Square, When Washingtonians receive restitution from cases brought by our office, it is our longstanding practice that those checks are signed by the Attorney General and come with a letter from the Attorney General. We serve the people, and it is important that Washington taxpayers know the work that is being done on their behalf. This has been standard since at least 2013. We have provided more than $200 million in direct restitution to Washingtonians during this time. And I don't know that the complaint so much so is that Bob's name's on the checks. It has to do with his name being on the checks and the letters sent out while he has an active campaign for governor going on. So there is a little bit of difference there in what the Attorney General's office is defending and in what Toby Nixon, the open government advocate who's filed the PDC complaint, is complaining about. And Toby Nixon on his Facebook page, he said what he thinks should happen in this case. He explained, you know, sort of the ins and outs of the complaint he filed. And then he said Ferguson should write a check from his campaign account to reimburse the taxpayers for the cost of mailing all those letters. The law says he can be required to repay triple that amount, and I hope he's required to do so to make him an example so that no other elected officials are ever tempted to do this. And I would also just go back to the fact that when Donald Trump sent out letters to Americans and checks that were for pandemic relief, that Democrats lost their minds about it. So there is an issue of moral consistency here. And it does just come off as bribery, even if that's not the intent, in the middle of an election campaign. Now, all of that being said, if you don't think there's a dang thing wrong with the Attorney General's office signing and Bob Ferguson signing these checks, sending the letter, fine. But hopefully you do find it problematic that a lot of these checks, I mean, we've been sent dozens of examples, that a lot of these checks are going to people who are deceased, who did not qualify or meet the low-income threshold, who don't have the financial need, addressed to people with names that don't even exist, sent to addresses that they haven't lived in 25 years. I just want to go through a couple. Because, Nicole, we put out the all call, and you just picked a couple that we're going to read here. And people sent us pictures of their chicken checks and sort of like, what do I do with this? Let's see. Jewel, I received a check and a letter from Bob Ferguson this past week addressed to my mother at my Olympia post office box address. My mother has never been associated with my address since I moved to Olympia in 1988. We have not had the same last name since 1972. She never lived anywhere in this state but Pacific County since 1949 until her death in 2005. That's correct. She's been deceased over 18 and a half years. But she got a chicken check. From Julie, my sister's ex-husband died 8 to 9 years ago, and we just got a chicken check for him. From Tara, I got the chicken tuna check for $120. Well, actually, it's in my father's first name, my sister's middle name, and my address. From Carrie, my grandma received a chicken check. She passed away February 28th, 2018. The check was made out to her but mailed to my mother-in-law in a different city. My grandma's income by far was not in the lower income bracket. Amanda Johnson, I received what I'm assuming is a chicken check, but I haven't opened it because it was sent to my address but addressed to John H. Johnson. My husband's name is Aaron, and I'm sure we don't qualify for it anyway. I'm wondering what I should do with it. Return to sender? And then Jim Walsh, who's the chair of the Washington State Republican Party, he had also posted on social media asking people to send him examples of checks that they received. This one was by far one of the worst examples I saw. He writes, bum check, Forrest Olson died in 1984. 40 years ago, but got a chicken check. Jim Walsh says, this is the worst example I've seen yet of craven sloppiness and how these fishy Fergie checks are sent out. But not the only example. The scheme needs to be investigated. It's a waste of public money or something worse. And I think that's the question here. At the very least, it's government incompetence. At the very least. And government incompetence is so rampant these days, it wouldn't surprise me at all. I mean, look at just the debacle in trying to handle money and unemployment benefits that went on during the pandemic. So at the very, very least, the Attorney General's office and their efforts to get this $40-odd million back to low-income Washingtonians was completely mishandled. Because you've got people who have been dead for 40 years getting these checks. what in the world kind of database are you using to send these things out? How do people wind up with checks that has their first name, someone else's middle name, and someone else's last name? How in the world do checks get sent to addresses that haven't been associated with people ever in their life? So we have asked the Attorney General's office to answer those questions, because this isn't even Jim Walsh. I mean, the dozens that we received and that people told me about on social media, I asked Jim Walsh when I saw him sent out that one about the person who died in 1984. I said, have you gotten others? He forwarded me 20 emails, and I'm still trying to confirm some of them with death records. But there was someone in the email who said they got a chicken check for a family member who died in 1966. And I'm thinking, what databases? I got to check death records on that one.
That is wild.
What databases even go back that far that the Attorney General's office would try to glean some sort of financial need information from? And I've heard the conspiracies about, oh, this is, you know, some sort of effort to target, yeah, I don't know, swing districts or something. And I don't know if that's true. But like I said, the very least, it's government incompetence. At the most, it's something much, much worse, which is an effort by Bob Ferguson to try to target specific voter sets. We have no proof of that. We do have proof, blatant proof of incompetence. And the other question is, where does the money go if the checks aren't cashed? We've asked the Attorney General's office that as well. So you've got $40.6 million and many examples of people we heard from a teacher who says, my income isn't even close to being 175% of the federal poverty line. And so you have examples like that. So wrong addresses, wrong names, dead people, people who are not financially eligible for the checks. So the whole thing is a boondoggle. The whole thing, and as I still think one of our viewers had the best idea, which is you should have given the money to food pantries. Because proteins, canned proteins, are by far the most in-demand item at food pantries. And so you could have used that money to stock up food banks across the state for people who need canned protein and can't afford it.
And that are suffering right now because they've been doing commercials saying, we're hurting right now after COVID. Nobody's right. Volunteering. Nobody's donating. We need help.
It would have been the best idea. Mm-hmm. So, and you know, there's just issues with this refund altogether. So you could be on any side of this. You could be a big, big fan of Bob Ferguson. You still can't defend how this has been rolled out. You still cannot defend someone who's been dead for 40 years getting a check. And that's not some one-off example. So you have those people, but then we are digging more into this, because to me, there's something else nefarious here. So there's the PDC violation. There's the fact that these were sent out while he's actively campaigning, etc. And then there's the question of where are the names coming from? What database is the Attorney General's office using? And is it a legitimate database for this purpose? So we pledge to try our best to get to the bottom of the chicken tuna check debacle. But keep sending in these examples. If you've gotten a chicken check and it's addressed to the wrong person, it's a deceased person, whatever it is, there's a problem with it, let us know. And I still also think that if you don't need the money, you should send that money over to Dave Reichert's gubernatorial campaign.
Yes, if it was actually made out
In honor of Bob Ferguson.
We did have some people wonder if they should be opening it because it's their deceased parents or it's their, you know, wrong last name, wrong first name, whatever it is. And that is a tricky situation.
It is.
You can't really cash a check that's not made
out
to you.
You can't. So you'd have to return to sender or just put it in the shredder. Mm-hmm. But again, what's happening to that money then?
Exactly.
I mean, I'm assuming the Attorney General's office is going to just keep the funds. Now, it would be better if they would do what they should have done in the first place and give the money to food banks. That doesn't come in. I mean, I don't think the Attorney General's office should keep the money. I agree with getting it back to citizens in some form, since it was citizens who were wronged by this. But this is a disaster by any stretch of the imagination. So keep the chicken check photos coming in and the stories. Absolutely wild, 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 wild stuff. Okay, something, we're just going to touch on this briefly because we discussed it on Sundays with subscribers, but I want to tease ahead to the show tomorrow. While we were on vacation, a huge story broke, and that was the acquittal of three Tacoma police officers in the 2020 in-custody death of Manny Ellis in Tacoma. You know, we talked on the Sunday show about why we chose, you know, never to cover this while the trial was going on the podcast. You know, I have my personal beliefs on. I just don't think that my coverage of it would have been helpful for the Tacoma police officers in terms of, I have a tendency to rile up the anti-police crowd. You know, it was the middle of a trial. They were already on trial. And it's like, anything I say is just going to amp up the wrong people. And I want these Tacoma officers to get a fair shake. And I'm glad that a jury of their peers found them not guilty. Coming up tomorrow, Nicole, on the show, we are going to have attorney Ann Bremner on the show tomorrow. And she was an attorney representing one of those Tacoma officers who is on trial. And so we very much look forward to getting her perspective on this, especially in light of the awful media coverage following the acquittal. I mean, gosh, there was an article in the Seattle Times, oh, this is proof the system is broken. Like, these officers went through so many investigations, then a full-blown jury trial where they were unanimously acquitted by a jury of their peers, all three of them. You know, and the only reason they were charged, first time ever AG Bob Ferguson has used his office to charge officers with murder after Initiative 940 passed, which lowered the threshold to charge officers with murder based on use of force. And so you went through all of these investigations, Pierce County Sheriff's Office, local reviews, and then the governor got involved, the attorney general got involved, who is now, by the way, 0-for-4 when it comes to political prosecutions of police officers in this state. And then you get a jury trial, airing of all the evidence, and still, when the outcome doesn't go in their favor, you have the media who's like, this is a miscarriage of justice. I mean, what do you want? I don't understand what people want. And so we're going to talk to Ann Bremner about, you know, the sentiment that's out there about what her clients went through, because apparently no one in the media cares. And look, I have a lot of sympathy for Manny Ellis's family. They lost a loved one through no fault of their own. That's horrifying. And my heart absolutely breaks for them. But at the same time, you know, the media coverage being so one-sided, what about these police officers? Public servants who have been put on trial for murder and even once acquitted are still being vilified in the court of public opinion. So yeah, we want to know how they're doing. We want to know what they went through. So we'll have Ann Bremner on the show tomorrow. Just a heads up for all of you. All right. As we enter the new year, I just want to offer some gratitude because we helped. Well, I would say Dr. Ryan Coogan and his team at Eastside Weight Loss Clinic helped a lot of people in 2023 with their health and wellness goals. So we just wanted to give a big thank you to Dr. Ryan Coogan and his team at Eastside Weight Loss Clinic. I mean, Lord knows they helped me lose 37 pounds before my wedding, which I'm so grateful for. But we've brought you a lot of stories, and I get emails all the time from undivided viewers and listeners who started their Eastside Weight Loss Clinic journey in 2023. Ben and Leslie. Leslie's story comes to mind. I mean, they, you know, did the program together. We took a picture together collectively, had lost 101 pounds, and they're out now running marathons and stuff. And just what a huge change in their lives by just dedicating themselves to this program. So it is a new year. If you've been hearing us, we've been now advertising with Eastside for a year. So if you've heard those ads, you've been thinking maybe. New year, new you, new commitment. Schedule a free 15-minute consultation with Dr. Ryan Coogan and his team at eastsideweightlossclinic.com. eastsideweightlossclinic.com. Ask them all the questions that you have before you commit to the program. That's what the free consultation is for. So eastsideweightlossclinic.com. But again, a big thank you to Dr. Ryan Coogan and his team for helping to change so many lives in 2023. Woo, we appreciate you. Okay, new year, but the same deadly crisis playing out on the streets of Washington State. This segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends over at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. Our friend Jonathan Cho, independent journalist, spent the first few minutes of the new year in downtown Seattle. He had gone to the event at Seattle Center to document some of the protests that were happening there around pro-Palestine protests. And then he thought, okay, it's a new year. It's the first few minutes of 2024. Let me go down to a place that I've been many, many times in 2023 and see how things are heading into 2024. And of course, he went down to the area around Three and Pine. And what he saw and what he documented was horrifying.
My first post of the new year. Nothing's changed. Just want to say Happy New Year, guys, from Third and Pike.
So he's walking down these sidewalks that at various points in 2023 seemed to be getting maybe a little bit better. The open air drug markets, the markets full of stolen merchandise. But then here he is. He posted this video at 12:30 a.m. Again, right after a New Year's Eve celebration. And you see people just in the throes of addiction, killing themselves with fentanyl. And this is so heartbreaking given, you know, this issue has been getting progressively worse throughout 2023. And to enter a new year and to see that no gains have been made, it's heartbreaking. And I don't understand how we've allowed it to continue to that extent. Especially, you know, given in King County, we saw record overdoses in 2023. I know that won't surprise anyone, but the numbers are insane. This is from the Seattle Times. King County's 2023 fentanyl deaths top 1,050, surpassing record. It says over 1,050 of the county's nearly 1,300 fatal overdoses this year involved fentanyl, sounding yet another alarm about the potency of the deadly synthetic opioid that's increasingly arriving in King County in powder and rock form, smuggled over the U.S. border from clandestine drug labs in Mexico. At least they acknowledge that. That's good that you're talking about the border issue. They go on to write, and those are just the deaths that have been confirmed. Another 82 suspected overdose deaths await pending toxicology reports. And this is the most terrifying stat to me. Emergency medical services have reversed more than 7,700 overdoses countywide this year. Hundreds of people have sought treatment, and public health officials have distributed thousands of test strips and naloxone kits. So if it hadn't been for the efforts of first responders to revive people from overdoses, we could be looking at nearly 10,000 overdose deaths in King County in 2023. That is a horrifying statistic. And it is above and beyond anything we experienced from a public health death perspective during the pandemic. But what happened for more than 3 years during the pandemic in Washington state? The government took extreme measures to protect people from themselves. People who weren't engaging in illegal behavior, but people who were trying to make a living, trying to go about their lives. You don't see anything close to the same kind of extreme measures to protect people who are engaged in illegal behavior from not only killing themselves, but from running an entire city and an entire economy as a result into the ground. I'll get to more on that comparison in a moment, but I was also just blown away by Brad Feingood with Seattle King County Behavioral Health for Public Health. So this is a guy who works for King County Public Health. He says something we all know. Drugs have gotten much more lethal. They've gotten to be much more available. And we know that they're much less expensive and they're also much more synthetic, he said. He also said people should test their drugs using fentanyl testing strips, refrain from using drugs alone, have naloxone on hand, and call 911 if problems arrive. Safe in the knowledge that someone who seeks medical help for a person experiencing a drug overdose is shielded from prosecutions. How about don't do drugs or we're going to put you in jail? And we're going to force you into treatment that way. No, don't do drugs alone. You know, have naloxone on hand so that when you do drugs and it kills you, you can bring yourself back to life. This is insane stuff. And I was really happy to see Sandeep Kashyap, who we've had on the show before. He's a Democratic political strategist. He's helped get many a Democrat elected in Washington state. He also sees the hypocrisy in all of this. When you compare from a public health emergency perspective, the response to the fentanyl crisis and the response to the pandemic, he tweeted out this graphic from the Seattle Times, which shows just the absolute skyrocketing rise in fentanyl overdoses in King County. He said, when COVID hit, we treated it like the public health emergency it was. But this public health disaster, business as usual. It's a scandal that we have no urgency, no real plan to address the fentanyl crisis ravaging Seattle's streets, one commensurate with the scale of the problem. And he is absolutely right. Thank God there are some people on the left who can be morally consistent with it on this and look at the issue with clarity. But it goes above and beyond having no urgency, no real plan, you know, looking at comparing it to the response to the pandemic versus the response to this deadly drug epidemic that we're in. It's not just that their response isn't adequate. It's that their response is backward. It's that their response and their idea of responding to this crisis is to make it worse. in Washington State, Democrats in Olympia, they spent 2 years kowtowing to progressives who wanted to legalize hard drugs. Remember when the Blake decision came down and it nullified our state's felony drug possession statute? Lawmakers could have fixed it by adding one word to the statute to make it constitutional again. Instead, what did they do? They argued for 2 years because some progressives wanted to use that as an opportunity to de facto legalize drugs. You know who one of those progressives is? Who is on the record saying that they do not want drug use to be a crime in our state? Bob Ferguson. The guy who may very well be the next governor. We're in the middle of a crisis that is killing thousands of people. We are ground zero in the United States for the fentanyl crisis. And we have a front runner for the office of governor who says that he doesn't want hard drugs to be criminalized. And then you have this hands-off approach. You've had Seattle City Council members. Thank God we start the new year with almost an entirely brand new Seattle City Council, who look at it as a crime of poverty. You've had a city attorney prior to Ann Davison who for years was so hands-off, and they call it, this is the biggest thing for me, they call it empathy. They believe they're the ones being empathetic to these individuals who are dying on our streets and in the gutter with a needle in their arm. Yet the government took extreme measures to protect you from yourself during the pandemic. But when it comes to people who are killing themselves out in the open, plain as day, breathing meth and fentanyl smoke all over our public transportation system in the face of anyone who walks by, are they taking steps to protect those people from themselves? To protect us from them? Not a chance. And why? Why? Because if it were about saving lives, if that were truly the goal, what we're doing right now is the opposite of what needs to be done to achieve that goal. Is it about money? Is it about political ideology? Is it about not being able to admit that you were wrong? Is it you really don't care if they die? Are you in bed with the drug cartel? I mean, all that sounds extreme, but I'm just baffled. It's so hard to wrap my mind around. And again, I'm so glad there are some Democrats. Sandeep Kashuk, we should really get him on the show this week. We've had him on the show before to talk about these issues. I'm glad that he sees it as they're treating it like it's not a crisis. It's one of the worst crises we've ever been through from a public health and public safety perspective. And if they're going to keep going down the path that they're going down now in terms of the party in power in Washington state, you can expect many more people to die in 2024. That segment was brought to you in partnership with our friends over at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. All right, new year, maybe you're in the market for new insurance. You want to look at some ways to possibly save money. Take the First Mark Challenge. Make that be one of the first things you do in the new year. Go to firstmarkinsurance.com and sign up for the First Mark Challenge. You got to put about an hour of your time aside, gather all your insurance documents so you can give them to First Mark. But what they're going to do is so valuable, and it's going to save you a lot of time on the back end. They're going to go over your current insurance. They're going to talk to you about your insurance needs. Then they're going to go out, local company, doing this for years, they're going to shop the big carriers for you. They're going to come back to you with a plan. They're going to present it to you and say, hey, we think this is the best insurance for the best price. Do you want to go with this? And you can say yes or no. And the best part is you never, never pay First Mark Insurance a dime for their work. So take the First Mark Challenge today. Dave Taylor says, you know, when people approach them, yes, you know, price is important. A lot of people want to save money when they switch insurance plans, but they bring a lot of other things to the table as well.
We like to talk about there's three elements to a really healthy insurance program. Yeah. It's having the right coverage. It's having the right coverage at a competitive rate, and it's having the service behind it when you need it, right? So all three things are really important. However, people are bombarded with the message of price, 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 right? So when people reach out to us, it's okay that they all pretty much reach out and say, hey, mm-hmm. I want to see if I can save some money.
And can you do it in 15 minutes or less?
Yeah, yeah. No. And the answer is no.
No, we can't. Okay. No. Yeah, they can't do it in 15 minutes or less, but it is going to be a superior product and an opportunity for you and your family to see if you can save a little money and maybe even get better insurance in the process. So firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. Talk to our friend Dave Taylor. They work for you, which is the best part. There is a really, really troubling disconnect that some legislative Democrats have when it comes to the real life impacts for working class people of the climate agenda that Governor Jay Inslee is trying really hard to protect. Let's get to it in our segment, Unbelievable. You all know by now how I feel about Governor Inslee's Climate Commitment Act. I think it is similar to the homelessness industrial complex. I think it's the climate industrial complex. He has promised a lot of things in the last 12 years while he's been governor. He's delivered on very, very few of them. In fact, some of his climate goals are actually going backward. And we know that, you know, they are hiding information on those goals. They're scrubbing websites. He's lied about the impact the carbon tax would have on gas prices. He's lied about it repeatedly. A WashDOT whistleblower says he was asked to lie about it. So it's all just a big scam, in my opinion. I care about the climate. I want to see things done to actually help the environment, to help the climate, things that are trackable, things we can measure, and that aren't a waste of money, because right now we're just sending billions of dollars down the drain. But anyway, we know that the government in Washington state is making money hand over fist from these carbon auctions. More money than they ever expected, more money than they even know what to do with, and they're making that money off your back at the pump. They're making that money off on the backs of working class people who have been suffering now under increased gas prices in Washington state for years, really, because we have some of the highest gas taxes in the country. But then you add on top of it, what, 50 cents per gallon that these carbon auctions are resulting in, an increase at the pump. We had, for the first time ever over the summer, the highest gas prices in the entire nation. It had never happened in our history. So some Republicans in Olympia are trying to figure out, okay, so you've got the initiative going on in the background that would repeal these aspects of the Climate Commitment Act. So that's cooking, right? And it's very possible that when it gets voted on in November, the Climate Commitment Act and these carbon auctions just go away so that this won't be necessary. But in the meantime, you have all this money coming in. Like I said, more than lawmakers ever wanted, needed, expected. So what do you do with it? Well, of course, Democrats are like, oh, goody, goody, all my pet projects. What can I fund with this? But there are some Republican lawmakers who are like, no, we need to give this back to people. You didn't budget for this much money. So let's give it back to people. We can look at, you know, registered vehicle owners. Obviously, we know who uses gas and who uses a vehicle and who has up-to-date registration. We can send this money back. So the proposal is House Bill 2040 from Representative Connors, Dye, and Couture, all Republicans. They describe the bill thusly. Registered vehicle owners in Washington would receive a $180 rebate check, or up to $360 per two-car family, next July under a proposal by Representative April Connors and Representative Mary Dye. House Bill 2040, also known as the Carbon Auction Rebate, would use the $1.3 billion in excess revenue. Yes, $1.3 billion in excess revenue collected under the state's new carbon allowance auctions to distribute an equal one-time payment to all 6.8 million registered vehicle owners in Washington. And then they note that out of respect for the initiative process, that bill would expire on October 31st prior to the next general election, because obviously if it goes away, you're not going to need these rebates anymore. So look, do I think that this is going to pass? No. Do I think Democrats are going to give up a dime of that $1.3 billion in money that they got from people who are suffering financially? No, they're going to find different ways and things to spend it on and pet projects, what have you. Now, that doesn't surprise me. But I will say it never ceases to amaze me, the true disconnect that some elected leaders, some quote-unquote public servants, have with the lives of everyday people. And I get it, that a lot of these progressive Democrats represent Seattle. And yeah, if you're representing a legislative district that includes a lot of a major city, you have different ideas, you have different solutions, your constituents have different wants and needs, and you're elected to look out for those, but you're also a state lawmaker. And if you're pushing policies and pushing an agenda that's only designed to help your specific set of constituents, the rest of the state be damned, is that really being a public servant? I don't think it is. I think being a public servant is doing the most good for the most amount of people and recognizing that sometimes your policy preferences have negative impacts on a lot of people. So Senator Jamie Peterson, who I found to be a reasonable guy in the past. He was asked by Como News about this because Senator Jamie Peterson, and this is from Como, was a sponsor of the cap and trade program through the Climate Commitment Act. So this has been his baby as much as it has been Governor Inslee's baby. It says he argued the proposed rebate is directly contrary to the objective of the program designed to get people to use less gas and pay for projects that are meant to slow or adapt to climate change. He said, quote, I think it's pretty unlikely that we're going to divide up all the money that we get from the Climate Commitment Act, all the excess revenue, and give it back to people based on how much gas was consumed in the state. We want people to take transit. We want people to use electric vehicles or walk or bike. Think about that for a second. So there's a proposal to give people who've, you know, been paying way too much at the pumps just a little bit of their money back. We're not talking about a lot here. We're talking about a little. And Senator Jamie Peterson's argument against that is, well, we want people to be commuting on their bikes. We want people to be walking. We want people to be using electric vehicles. So if we give them this money back and they just put it, you know, they spend it on gas to put back in their cars, then that's just the opposite of what we're trying to achieve. That sounds like someone who has never, ever left Seattle. That sounds like someone who has never, ever been outside a city limit. I've said it before, man, if public transit was convenient, I would take it in a heartbeat. Who wants to sit in traffic if there's a viable public transit option? Who wants to waste that much money on gas if there's a viable alternative? But for, I would say, 90% of the people in Washington state by geography, that there is no viable alternative for them. They have to drive to work. Electric vehicles even aren't a viable option for them. You want to tell someone in the Tri-Cities, you want to tell someone, gosh, in Republic Washington, that they should bike to work, that they should walk everywhere they go. Like, that's great if you live on Capitol Hill. It's not so great if you live in a rural area. And that's what I mean by the disconnect, is you're punishing people for an activity but that they have no choice but to participate in. You're punishing people for the only for utilizing the only way they can to get to and from work to make a living for themselves and their family. And you are so opposed when you have 1.3 billion in excess revenue. You're so dead set on punishing those people for something that they have no choice or say in, that you're not willing to give them $180. That's pretty ridiculous. That's not public service. That's greed. That's greed, and that is a level of disconnect that is really hard for me to wrap my mind around, and it is frankly unbelievable. All right, moving on in the show, we've been talking about the state of the rental market and the real estate market with all these strict landlord-tenant laws that are in place. When they went into place in Seattle, man, did we see small landlords just hightail it out of there? We're probably going to see the same thing in Tacoma now that they've passed some strict tenant protections. Our friend Wes Jones with sellwithwes.com talked about what the implications could be.
Since 2019, Seattle has lost over 11,000 rental units.
Wow, yeah.
This is important. This is something, you know, like those are less rental units on the market. Majority of those, Brandy, they're not crappy little apartments. Mm-hmm. Those are single family homes. That is the cream of the crop when it comes to, you know, rental inventory. Those are not being sold to other investors. You know, those just, they don't pencil anymore. Somebody's had that for 10, 15, 20 years, you know, and that's going to go to somebody who is going to move, you know, into the city. That is out of the rental pool. That is gone.
And that's unfortunate, but it is what it is. I mean, I would never expect a small landlord to hold on to a rental property with such strict laws in place. What, for the greater good? No, you have a rental property some people do in retirement because that's how they make money. That's That's how they live. And so we're probably going to see a lot of those sold. If you're thinking about selling, you have some questions about kind of the state of the market, whether it's a good time to sell your rental property, whether you should hold on to it, reach out to our friend Wes Jones. Sellwithwes.com. Sellwithwes.com. A better way to sell your home or your rental property if you give up. Call Wes. He also has some rental properties in Tacoma that he's trying to figure out what to do with. All right, dipping outside of Washington State. God, it's good to be back. I just love it. I love you guys. I love being back. Nicole's like, okay, whatever, Brandy. Slave driver. Before we get into some of these national political stories and one really off the wall one that Nicole put in there that's absolutely hilarious, I asked you guys for a daily subscriber poll question today to kind of look ahead to all the key elections this year and ask yourself this. What do you believe will be the most important issue for swing voters in 2024? And I do believe we have a lot of swing voters in the audience. I am traditionally a swing voter, meaning my ballot will have a little bit of D, a little bit of R. I'll tell you in 2024. I don't think you're going to see me vote for a lot of Democrats in Washington State because we just need an absolute course correct. But I asked you, okay, of all these issues, which one do you think will be most critical in influencing the votes of swing voters? Candidate quality or lack thereof, meaning like I'm not voting for that guy, so I'm going to vote for this guy. Immigration / border crisis, public safety, economy, abortion, or other. A lot of people saying the economy and also public safety, although you could argue that the border crisis also has something to do with public safety. I certainly think that's the case. So let's read a couple of your responses. So right now on Patreon, 37% of people are saying the economy, and that's the most. Let me see. Julie Haffen says, having realized in the past few years how much the elected officials do impact and manipulate the direction of the rest, I have to go with candidate quality. In order, getting away from things like transitioning of kids without physical indication, economy and the border are all huge issues for me, but can all be addressed with quality officials. That's a good point. Where if you've got like a good quality candidate, you won't see some of these crazy, crazy policies being pushed through. So it might take care of the rest of those issues. I see what you're saying, Julie. Y says, for me, quality of candidate and public safety is important with the economy following very close. However, I think the Democrats will make the abortion the hot topic, and I am afraid many swing voters will get swayed. I hope that's not the case. But, you know, they are going to try. You already see that happening with Dave Reichert. That's the primary attack. Even though he wouldn't change the law in Washington State, that's another issue entirely. We're not talking about honesty here. We're talking about what they're going to do. I do think we are going to see a pretty big dip in the economy in 2024, though. So I think that, for me, is the answer. I do think it's going to become more apparent for folks mid-year. Jill said, I haven't decided yet. The mainstream media will decide what's important. Unfortunately, they'll probably make it all about abortion to distract from our real problems, and the sheeple will buy it. Not us, though. We're not sheeple. Greg Porter said, a good candidate with great leadership qualities could drive significant improvement on all issues. Let me get a couple from locals in here. Weisscastle says, public safety for county and cities and state AG, economy for almost all other state and federal offices. Illegal immigration will impact, was almost zero until the bills were due. And I think I agree with you on that, that depending on what you're voting on, the important issues differs. So for instance, on border, is that going to be a key issue for me in the race for governor? No, although I would like to see governors in blue states speak out more about what's happening at the southern border, but I'm much more apt to vote for someone based on what they're going to do for taxation, based on public safety, etc. Chris says, Brandy, it's always the economy. People care more about that than anything else. At the end of the day, I do believe that you're right, because that has the most tangible impact on people's lives. All right, so moving on to some national political news off of that. So also something that happened while we're gone, Maine became the second state to say, oh, we're not going to let Trump on the ballot here. Vivek is, again, just as he did in Colorado, encouraging his fellow Republicans to stand up for Donald Trump. And it's not so much standing up for Donald Trump, but it's sort of the bigger picture here of what it could mean for our democracy if you have these blue states keeping Trump off the ballot. So here's Vivek.
It's one person just made a unilateral monarchical determination that Donald Trump doesn't belong on the ballot. Think about that. One individual in some state just decided, who's a partisan Democrat, decides, hey, Donald Trump shouldn't be on the ballot. So now he's taken off the ballot in Maine. That's not the United States of America. It's anti-American. It's fundamentally unconstitutional, but it's not only is it unconstitutional, it goes to the heart of who we are. We're a country. If it means one thing to be American, it's that we the people choose who runs the country. And so if one random person in one random state can decide to eliminate an entire presidential candidate, let alone one who's at least currently leading the field. That's a bastardization of what this country was founded on. So I stand by my pledge. Any state where Donald Trump is forcibly removed from the ballot in this way, I'll also remove myself. And I challenge Chris Christie and Nikki Haley and Ron DeSantis to do the same thing, or else they're also complicit. If every Republican removes themselves from the ballot in Maine, that automatically stops this election interference in our GOP primary.
Yeah, I agree with him on this. And look, if Donald Trump had been convicted of insurrection, I'd feel much differently about the situation. But he hasn't. And we cannot allow, in Maine, it was really unilateral from a Democrat who is on the record as not liking Trump, et cetera, for them to make that decision and rob voters in Maine of a choice is incredibly wrong. It's very dangerous for our democracy. We're not talking about someone who's been convicted of insurrection in a court of law. It is not up to the Secretary of State of Maine to decide whether Donald Trump is guilty of insurrection and therefore shouldn't be on the presidential primary ballot. It's crazy stuff. It really freaks me out, honestly, this direction that we're going in, and that it doesn't seem like it, the momentum of crazy is dying out on the sort of Trump derangement syndrome. And people accuse me of having Trump. Nicole, let me just talk to you about something quick.
Okay.
You know how many emails I continue to get about our disagreement over Trump, Biden, Trump, Newsom? I had this woman, honestly, my feelings were hurt, was like,
oh, no.
On Facebook, Brandy, I used to think a lot of you, but after hearing what you said about Trump and if he went up against Newsom, I don't like you as much. I'm like, because of one thing. That's a very liberal, like, liberal mindset approach to disagreement, which is like, oh, I liked you and all these things you did, and now I hate you. It's like, come on,
yeah,
man.
I don't like those kind of attacks. However, I do.
It's an attack on me. I can't defend myself.
No, you definitely can. Well, I mean, I think you've defended yourself multiple times. Like, I don't think that defines you or defines you as a voter in this country. But
I'm entitled.
That being said, I still don't get it.
But here's the confusion.
You're voting on personality.
Here's what people are confused about. Mm-hmm. I never said that I would vote for Joe Biden or Gavin Newsom. I never said that. The choice for me is not, would I vote for Trump or Biden? It's, would I vote at all, or would I vote for a third party candidate?
Well, I think,
or would I vote for Trump? I'm not going to vote for Biden. I'm not going to vote for Newsom. Mm-hmm. But I have a hard time voting for Trump. I do not like the man. His policies are fine. But honestly, we can do much better. So I'll vote for the Libertarian. But I'm not. In case it wasn't clear, I'm not going to vote for Joe Biden or Gavin Newsom, who I think will replace Joe Biden.
So you didn't vote for Joe Biden in the last one?
No, I wrote in Joe, yeah. I voted for you Joe Jorgensen. I didn't have to write it in. She was on the ballot.
Oh, yeah, Joe.
Now, I think
and
the criticism was...
And you don't remember
was,
the time before that?
I believe it was Hillary Clinton.
Right? Okay.
Oh, yeah. Obama? I was in college. Of course I voted for Obama.
Oh, yeah.
And then I voted for Hillary Clinton.
Oh, that is why people
Keep in
freaked
mind,
out.
No,
that
people,
was the main
the,
reason.
The freak out that people gave me was because I said if it were Trump and Biden, I'd have a hard time. And I think they took like have a hard time as in I might
You're
vote for Biden.
Considering something. Mm-hmm.
But the hard time would be, do I even vote? Or do I vote for the Libertarian?
I don't
which
like
some
that
people would
that.
Say
that
is
not your...
Yeah, but I'd still vote for everyone voting. Else. That doesn't mean... I have a perfect voting record since I started voting.
Mm-hmm.
But... That doesn't mean that I fill in every
sure.
race. And if I have to leave the presidential race blank for my conscience, I will do that.
That's what we're saying we don't understand. Because it's policy. If we could pick the personality of somebody, I would love to pick the personality. And his personality is not what I would choose for the race. But I can't make somebody run that... Can't get on the ballot.
But you can with your vote over time. I do believe that if more people were like, I'm not going to accept morally bankrupt people just because I like their policies, I do think over time we could have higher quality candidates. That's my issue, is I don't want to, I'm not looking for the perfect person. I mean, I'm not perfect either, but I sure as heck, I take my vote very seriously. You know, I love this country. It's patriotic duty. But I really don't like the guy. And then Biden is on his deathbed and he's absolutely incompetent. So now I'm looking at it as a citizen, like, this is what you gave me?
Well, see, I actually think that that's why we got here. I think that's why we have a Trump. Because it was that bad and people were frustrated with it already. And so then Trump says, okay, that's it. I'm going for it. And then it just created this, you know, steam, this you know, MAGA party that where they just went all in on anti-establishment, anti, you know, politician. And so I think that's why we got here, because people were so frustrated. So now I think we need to go, well, no, we need a balance. We need somebody that knows what they're doing in government, and we need somebody that still treats the Constitution as the law of the land and also cares about him, his family, his, you know, people that disagree with him, people that agree with him.
Yeah.
So I think that I think that's why we got here. I think we are at the extreme because people were so frustrated. And now we've got to say, okay, now we need somebody in the middle. Let's stop the divisiveness.
Yeah, but then there's like a lot of people on the right who think the middle is just this weak, meh, like has no backbone, which I get it. You know, they're doing that to Dave Reichert now, that he's all, he's a rhino, whatever it is. And it's like, look, we're in...
Can we just be normal people? Can everybody?
It's not just about that. It goes back to what I said earlier, which is being a public servant means doing the most good for the most amount of people, in my opinion. It doesn't mean that you sacrifice your principles and your values, but you also, it's more than just you. It's more than about you and what you believe in. It's about, okay, I have this whole country. I have 50 million odd people that I'm responsible for. A lot of them disagree with me politically. A lot of them don't want the same types of things that I want. Doesn't mean I have to sacrifice my values, but how can I do the most good for the most amount of people and improve our country? And I feel like that mindset goes out the window because you're so focused on catering to your political party, catering to your base.
Like, let's worry about now.
Like, yes. And it's just, it's really frustrating to me is like you have people who are so, and it's the parties, right? The party system is destroying our country. It's why George Washington warned against political parties, because it becomes them versus, like, instead of, okay, we're all here together to try to serve the country. So we need the blowhards out. We need, like, people who are way too obsessed with their political base out.
It's term party, or it's term limits and two party.
Yes.
I think the combination of those is what's created this.
Yeah. Oh, I'm scared to look at the comments today. Look, I'm not voting for Biden.
People don't like Hillary. It's the Hillary thing.
I was Hillary. In my 20s, you guys, I was but a was wee a... child with I was a I had what do I always say about Democrats? Democrats like vote with their heart, not their head. That's how I feel.
Okay.
And I was just a bright-eyed young girl who, by the way, came from the Midwest where being a Democrat is much different.
Wait. That was when you voted for Hillary, you were a Democrat? That wasn't very long ago.
No, that's 2016. That was seven years ago. Yeah, but
that wasn't very long.
Yeah, but it was Hillary versus Trump. I've never been what I would consider like loyal to a party, right?
Right.
But at the same time, that was me coming from the Midwest, where Democrats really aren't that scary. I mean, I just got back from Minnesota, where a lot of my family are Democrats, and they're not. If they came to Seattle. There's no way in hell they'd be a Seattle Democrat.
Right.
They'd be a Republican overnight.
Oh, yeah.
So my view of Democrats wasn't this extremist that I've now come to know Seattle and progressives as.
And again, I think it's how we got here because in the Obama years, it really wasn't that scary. Nobody was that scared.
Yeah.
And then...
No.
And then it ramped up. And then
social media.
Well, social media and then socialism all of a sudden is making this comeback with colleges and younger people mostly, but then some crazies. But anyway, so I think everything's kind of ramped up.
I'm just looking at comments. Wow, we got off track. But man, I've been getting so much hate for that one conversation about how people are like, if I'm not willing to vote for Trump, I'm persona non grata. Like all of a sudden,
I think it's the dismissal of the policy.
Oh, I have not dismissed the policy, but I'm not willing to vote for one man that some people who watch this show like, and all of a sudden it's like, I might as well be the enemy. It's like, really? Come on, man. That's not what this show's about. That's not what we're trying to foster. I'm trying to articulate the reasons why I have never voted for him, and I probably will not. I'm not ruling it out this time around because things are really, really bad right now.
Right.
But it's like, don't vilify me for that. Don't write me off. Some lady's like, I'm done. And I'm like, come on, man. I'm just trying to be honest.
Make the case. Make the case to her.
I'm trying to be true to myself and honest with you.
This is how we should have conversations, though. Yes. Make the case. Don't write off.
Don't unsubscribe. I mean, you can unsubscribe, but it's like every time I say something bad about Donald Trump, it's like, I'm canceling my subscription. It's like, okay, you sound like a liberal. Just like, honestly. Anyway. Let's do a fun one. Right, let's skip the mayors on the border.
Okay.
We can do it tomorrow. A woman is suing today in our segment, Time to Get a Job.
Yes, exactly.
Woman is suing Hershey for deception. And look, I take my Reese's peanut butter cups very seriously. Like, I take them very seriously.
Peanut butter and chocolate, man.
I get that this is a serious issue. However, this woman needs a job. The headline from Fox, Hershey sued, accused of deception in Reese's peanut butter pumpkins. The popular products do not have carved out artistic designs despite their packaging, says the lawsuit. So as you know, Reese's peanut butter cups, they'll change the shape, which I don't like. Like, don't mess with the ratio. You know what I mean? Like, that ratio in the traditional ones, like Mike put in my stocking some Reese's Thins.
Oh, no.
Babe, I love you. Not enough peanut butter.
Although those do still have the ridges, because that's my favorite part. The ridges.
All a little, yeah. But they're not as big. Yeah. Yeah. So don't mess with the original. However, Reese's does. And you know, if it's a football season, Christmas, Halloween, they make different shaped ones. So what this woman claims is that you're not getting an accurate depiction of what's on. So, oh, man. Okay, we're going to talk about the snore jar later.
Yep.
You're not getting an accurate depiction of what is on the outside. So, for instance, when it's Halloween, it shows that there's like a smiley pumpkin. And then you open it up and it just...
There's no smile.
There's no smile.
It's not a jack-o'-lantern.
It's barely...
It's just a pumpkin.
It's barely pumpkin-shaped, to be honest. And then there's one that's supposed to have a football and the little laces on the football. And you open it up and apparently it just looks like an egg. Looks like a Reese's flattened egg. And she, what I think is really funny, is you guys all know how lawsuits sort of look, and it's all official, and you sort of write your exhibits and your documentation. So she's got the documentation in there, in this official lawsuit against Hershey Company, of like what it's supposed to look like versus how she opened it. It says, looks like an egg, and it just is all funny.
You've been wronged.
Yes, get a job, okay? Get a job. I also, for the TikTok influencers, I see these influencers who it's their thing to do... healthier versions of popular candy. And I'm like, I don't want your healthy Reese's peanut butter cup.
No.
Like, I don't want it. Don't get
the
it near me.
Butter.
Same for you, Trader Joe's. The ones you sell at your checkout line, blasphemous. Like, I don't want them. Okay, I'm so far off track today. We're going to talk about our snort and swear jar and how much money it wound up with at the end of the year coming up next. But first, there is a bipartisan proposal in Olympia this legislative session that would mandate... a half a credit of financial literacy for seniors in Washington State public schools. I think this is a fantastic idea. We talked to Zach Abraham with Bulwark Capital about this because he's also very passionate about financial literacy for youth. And he thinks, you know, this is a great idea, even when it comes to just the very basics.
To even understand how to write a check or what writing a check means, right? What is that money? I remember as a kid, my mom saying at the store, no, we can't afford that. And I remember looking at her and going, Mom, look at all the checks you have left. Right? Like, write a check, you know? I think all kids probably think like that. And you know what's interesting? You bring this up. Our good friend Dory Monson and I used to talk about all the time. As soon as he retired from radio, we were going to do financial literacy classes together for families and things like that. So it's a passion of mine. I'm a firm believer if the average person really, and it's kind of what we try to do on our show to some degree. It's not so much politically aimed, obviously, but financially, trying to explain to people what these things mean, right? Like if you understand what they actually mean, if you understand what's going on, if people knew what was actually going on financially in this country, I am convinced elections would go differently.
True that. Zach also said he'd volunteer to teach some of those classes at high schools, although since he comes on our show, I don't think that they're going to let him near any public school in Washington State. But Zach gives a lot of advice, including for young people on his radio show, KnowYourRiskRadio.com. KnowYourRiskRadio.com. You can also learn about their risk management strategy to find out how to protect your retirement against risk. And that is the climate that we're in right now. Very risky. So KnowYourRiskRadio.com. Okay, before we get to questions and comments. It is the end of 2023, so we've had our snort jar all year, which benefits our charity of the year. So I've been doing $1 for every snort, and then $20 for every swear, which I've been trying to swear less, because Mike might divorce me if he hears me swear on the podcast. So our total is... Do you have that sound? Pick a button. Come on, Nicole, don't get it wrong. Okay. $107 in the swear snort jar, which honestly, it's too long. That applause line is too long. Daryl, you need to work on that. So here's what we're going to do with this. I'm going to empty it out, obviously. There's a couple IOUs in there, but all I'm going to do is I'm going to make a $107 donation to our charity of the year, We Heart Seattle. And if you are so inclined, I would invite you to match that donation for $107. We Heart Seattle, of course, we've had the founder, Andrea Suarez, on the show many times. They do tremendous work in Seattle and have inspired other people outside of Seattle to take it upon themselves to do what the government is not doing, to reach out to people who are living on the streets, to clean up a million pounds of trash since they started. And to really take ownership of the city. And so We Heart Seattle was our charity of the year for 2023, as selected by you. I will make that $107 donation to them today. I invite you to do the same if you would like. It's a good tax write-off. And then coming up in a couple weeks, we will announce our 2024 charity of...
Wow, that was really loud on your mic.
Sorry, 2024 charity of the year. But yeah, if you would like to participate. And then I don't know what the jar will become in 2024, because I actually have gotten pretty good. This has served as a double benefit of actually improving some of my bad habits.
Maybe we'll just up the cost of each.
We could do that.
Yeah.
We could do that. We could make it more expensive for me to snort and swear. Although, I will say, every time I swear on the show, you guys give me money in super chats to make up for it, because I'm usually swearing about some dumb stuff Jay Inslee did, and you guys help me out with that. So anyway, there you have it. Or maybe we'll have a swear jar where Nicole, whenever she does, whenever we talk about our cats, you know, it could be the cat jar or something.
I don't talk about the cats. True. People want to know.
That's true. They do. Okay, questions and comments from the live stream. We're going a little long today, but that's okay. It's the first of the year. If we're going to come to work, we might as well really work hard. On the chicken tuna checks, Jonica Combs says, I wish I had any faith that this gets punished. Yeah, I don't know what the PDC is going to do, because, again, if there's precedent that he's sent checks with his name on it before, are they going to look at that differently? Scott says, what does it matter if he's fined? It's we taxpayers who will pay the fine. Fergie knows this and could care less, unless they fine his campaign. If they fine his campaign, then that would come from him, right, not from the AG's office. Because it is a PDC complaint, so it's election related.
But I feel like it'd be one of those things that never gets paid.
One of those fines
that never gets paid. That would be a gigantic amount of money.
It would. They usually wouldn't do that. It would be like a one-time fine. I'm more interested in getting to the bottom of, as we are trying to do, why so many dead people got checks.
Right. I think that, as somebody suggested, maybe it's a voter registration. And maybe this is why there's a voter registration problem.
I mean, that would mean that those deceased people are voting. Is that what you mean? Or they haven't been cleared from the voting rolls.
Right.
That's a lot of
assumptions. Right. No, it's just an idea.
It's an idea.
It's a thought.
I wish people could see you on camera right now. You're like,
it's just an idea.
It's just an idea. Don't get mad at me, Brandy.
I know. Yeah, it's not a conspiracy. It's just an idea,
you know,
of how this could be happening. And if all of these dead people are getting ballots and then they're getting chicken checks, like, we've got to clear up the dead database.
Dead database. Today's conspiracy is tomorrow's front page news. Speaking of dead database, somebody said I say Reese's wrong. Where is this comment? Hold on, I have to read this really quick.
It's at the bottom of comments, actually. I put it in there.
Oh, you did? Okay, I'll get to it then.
Listen to how she's pronouncing Reese's. She's voting for Biden, obviously. That's from Charles.
What? How do you pronounce it? Reese's?
Oh, yeah, I do.
Reese's peanut butter cups.
You say Reese's, I see Reese's.
You know, I thought this was a safe place where my regional dialect would not be judged, but I'm starting to learn that you guys are very judgmental toward me. I'm just trying to live my life, okay? Shannon says, we got a check for $120. We are in the top 10% of income earners. Shannon, send us your information. It was supposed to go to those in the 175% of the poverty level threshold. And then you have some questions. One, how do they know how much a family makes? I guess taxes. From what database do they get the information? How do they know how many people are in my household? How do they know how much chicken or tuna I bought? They don't. Why did I get a check when I'm clearly not at the 175% of the poverty level? All of those are good questions. Again, we are going to continue to try to get answers. But in the meantime, we want to hear from as many people as possible who have a check that's a little bit fishy, a little bit.
Some people are saying that they got the dead checks and they haven't got ballots. So, but there's some overlap.
Yeah.
Something.
Fishy. What's some other kind of fishy? Rotten.
I like that.
Shelly Rose says, the Chicken Check website also said it's going to reserve some of the money for those who think they qualify for the refund. There's a place on the site to apply for a Chicken Check if you think you qualify. I saw that, and that also might have just been the best way to go about it.
But if they save them, I mean, they knew that they were going to have some random checks out there that didn't get cash. Well, how much money do they save, and what happens to that money if nobody does call and say,
does it go to this reserve? And that's the question. Yeah. All questions we need to get asked. Kenneth says, where's my chicken check, Bob? I'm retired and living on Social Security, and I eat chicken. Maybe it's because you know you can't buy me, Bob. That's possible.
Possible.
Bob checked Kenneth Hummel. Nope, not that guy. Don't give him any money. Okay, I asked you guys your New Year's resolutions.
And nobody gave us any.
Wait, what?
Seriously, we got two.
Okay.
People, come on.
Matt Gilbert says, to tell people how I really feel, as if you don't do that already, Matt Gilbert. Let's get honest here. I'm going to need my own swear jar. Not a resolution, but get back to eating healthy. I was killing it and then binged on garbage for the past few weeks, and I wonder why I feel like trash recently. I've had way too much sugar the past 2 weeks. I think that's why I'm breaking out. I've got some pimples that have been going on. I think it's from sugar. Mm-hmm. Andy Stevens says, my resolution, fire the progressives out of Olympia in November. Lots of work to do for this one. I agree. Nicole, resolutions? Spit it out.
I haven't.
First thing that comes to your mind.
Made one. Oh, I always want to get my health more managed or more controlled.
Okay.
And then I would say I'm just doing a reset. I'm trying to. You kind of get frustrated when I plan too much and I'm too in the future. And so I'm going to try to
live in the moment.
And yeah, I don't know. I'll come up with some other stuff, but I'm always trying to just live my best life.
You do a pretty good job of that. You do take advantage of time. Like when I think of, you know, all the weird sayings about living for the moment and taking advantage of this life, you only get one. I think of you because I'm like, that girl goes on vacation. Whenever you get a spare day, you're like, how can I take advantage of all 24 hours to their maximum?
That's true.
Or I'm napping on the couch with my dog and thinking this is the best thing I could do with my time. My resolutions, drink more water. This is water in my cup I got from my sister that says spilling the tea since 1773.
Wow. I don't think I've ever seen you drink water.
Drink more water, less coffee.
I thought that was going to be funny, but it's actually true.
More water, less coffee.
Okay.
Spend more time with my dogs, if that's humanly possible. Spend more time with my husband. So I need to get him to work less.
Yeah. Similar schedule.
And, you know, don't let the trolls get me down.
There you go.
Which I don't think they do, but some days maybe.
Keep it. Keep that mentality.
I'll think of more. But those mindset. Are my, and then... Like the device 9 in the 206, I didn't vote for Hillary or Trump. Oh, the device 9. In 2016, I didn't vote for Hillary or Trump, but my vote in Washington was meaningless. If anyone but Hillary had a chance to win here, I would have voted for Trump, even though I'm not a fan. Yeah, I want like a Javier Milei. I'm hoping the U.S. can get to the brink where it's like, we just need a full-blown libertarian in who's going to cut the government in half. That would be exciting because there's too much government waste, and we're going to talk about that government waste in our closing sanity check.
Nicole, okay, we never did talk about New Year's and the Space Needle disaster and all of that.
The Space Needle was a big debacle.
It was
What have you come to expect?
I don't know why it's so hard for this city. That's the thing is that I think it really comes down to the city, right? This city cannot even put on a fireworks show. It can't solve the drug crisis. It can't solve homelessness. And it can't even put on a
If you can't put on a fireworks show, there's no chance you're going to solve
That's
homelessness.
Right. Anyway, I just pointed out because every other city, country that I saw did all right. And then there's Seattle. Big smoke cloud covering all
so
the fireworks.
So bad. I saw a lot of them in the comments, too.
Crazy. Anyway,
sorry, it was a bummer. I'm sorry you wasted your time.
No.
But speaking of government incompetence, we have something to talk about in our closing sanity check. So we ranted on the show a couple months ago about how Marco Lias, State Senator Marco Lias, was defending his taxpayer-funded trip to Finland to go all the way there and study how they've managed to reduce traffic fatalities. And we, of course, along with a lot of other people, thought you really have to go all the way to Finland to learn that they lowered the speed limit and put in some speed cameras. No, the guy just wanted to go to Finland. He's got, that's where I think he has his family ties in Finland. And he didn't go alone. There were other, you know, public servants who went there on the taxpayer teat. And so he was defending himself, basically saying anyone who criticized him was right-wing lunatic. Well, Marco Lias is now basically just admitting that he went to Finland for a good time. He tweeted, you can't buy happiness, but you can buy a ticket to Finland. And that's pretty much the same thing. Is he trolling us, or is he lack that much?
The citizens of Washington paying his way to Finland.
I feel like, I don't think he lacks self-awareness. So I really do feel like this is him caring so little of the criticism that taxpayers funded his holiday shopping trip to Finland, that he's just like, yeah, I went to Finland to find happiness. And by the way, Marco Lias, let us fix that for you, because of course you could buy a ticket to Finland, but in your case, you can't buy happiness, but taxpayers can buy you a ticket to Finland. And that's pretty much the same thing. That has been your sanity check for today, the first one of 2024, and that has been our first episode of 2024. Thank you for being here, those who joined us on a holiday. Thank you for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. We're really excited for 2024. You know, politics is our bread and butter. It's our first big election year since launching the podcast. We have a lot of exciting things in store, so we appreciate your support of the show. If you have not signed up already, please do so. It's just $5 a month. UndividedPod.com. I can't promise that I'm never going to say anything bad about Donald Trump, but I hope that's okay with you guys.
But I'll try.
All right. Happy New Year.